Welcome back to the West Side Discussion Podcast, the first and only podcast dedicated to West Side Discs. My name is Jay. Thanks for listening. This is episode 19. Today I'm joined by Joshua Potan. Josh has been on Team West Side Discs since 2017. He's also sponsored by Midwest Dye Labs. If you haven't heard my interview with Mason Maxwell, be sure to go back and listen to that one. Josh, thank you so much for coming on. How are you doing today?
Doing well. How about you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Thank you. So let's just get started. And we'll start from the beginning. How'd you get into disc golf?
My buddy and I were working at a church together. I think it was 2007 is when it was. And we used to play baseball together when we were kids. So we hadn't played in, I don't know, 5-6 years. So he's like, hey man, you want to go play baseball at one of the local parks? I said, sure, why not? So we went go get our gloves and played catch. And while we're out there, we noticed these disc golf baskets. I mean, I'd seen them before. There's another park in the area where we go hang out and feed the ducks and different things like that. It was like a Girard Park. So we've seen the baskets before, and we saw people out there playing. So I was like, hey, you know, we called it frisbee golf. You know?
Right.
He's like, hey, man, you want to go play frisbee golf? I was like, sure, why not? Let's go. There's an academy down the road. Let's go check it out. So we ended up going to the academy, looking through DX disc. I think he bought a DX Stingray, and I know my first disc I bought was a DX Cheetah, because I was like, ooh, cheetah, I love cheetahs, they're awesome. We had no idea that they did different things. You know, we thought they were just cool names, you know.
Right. I've shared before, that's why I started throwing West Side Disc, because I just like the stamps. I thought the queen best. And the sword, and I was like, oh, like, I like the design, so I'll just make these discs. So, all right. So you found the cheetah, and then what happened?
Well, so we went out and played. It's a fairly wooded course. I mean, it's most of the holes between 200 and 300 feet. But I mean, we fell in love. We just went out with our one disc, going in the woods, and I love nature. So just being out in the woods and throwing and hiking around and stuff, it was a blast. We literally played every single day for the next 2 weeks. We would go on our lunch break because we worked together. We'd be like, we take like an hour and 15 minute lunch, because the course only took like 45 minutes to play. It was, you know, a fairly short course. So we literally played every single day for 2 weeks, and then they had a tournament in that, towards the end of that 2 week period. We saw, and one of our other buddies we had worked with before, we found out he played and he was going to play that tournament. So me and him entered it, novice division. I shot 24 over par in my first tournament, 10 over the first round, 14 over the second round. I was like towards the bottom of the pack.
Oh, wow.
And it sleeted in April in Louisiana. It was nuts. It never does that. But I loved it. I mean, once I could see my name on the boards. This was before we had PGA Live. You know, you had all the scorecards and the boards, and I could see my name at the bottom. I was like, oh, my name's not going to be at that bottom again.
So what'd you do to, you know, take your name from the bottom? What was kind of your routine?
Just playing. I mean, practicing. So that first tournament I showed up with, I still had the cheetah, and I got a birdie as my putter. I went to the tournament. I mean, I'd been playing for 2 weeks. No bag, nothing. Just
those two discs?
This couple. I think I may have had a mid-range. I don't remember.
Okay.
It was either two or three discs, but I know it was a cheetah and a birdie, because there's a guy, Alan Morrow, from Arkansas. He came down to play that tournament, and he always talks about that. He's like, this guy Josh shows up, no bag, and kicks my butt, you know? He's like, I've been playing for years, and he just shows up out of nowhere. I mean, I was garbage, but I think we tied during the round. I think he shot 10 over also the first round.
I think, you know, some people use that as a kind of their advantage. To people underestimate him. I've seen people show up to like shopping bags to play a tournament.
Oh, yeah, a little over-the-shoulder bag. And they have like six discs, but they're great with them.
Exactly.
So after that, I just kept playing and learning more discs. We actually used to find discs. They have a few little ponds around here. We'd get rakes and no names. And they didn't have any Facebook groups or, you know, lost and found groups back then. So if they didn't have a no name, you know, free bid. I think I found like a T-Rex with no name, and I started liking it. And I ended up just, I mean, we played four or five times a week over the next month. And I entered in another tournament, and I moved up to the intermediate division, and there was 30 players in that division, and I finished in seventh place and ended up cashing and getting like $70 in prizes. And this was the first time where I was like, they had this. The first time I went to was they had just ordered a few discs. It was like, I don't know if there's a player's pack or anything, but this second tournament was like a vendor came and brought all kinds of discs, and he had boxes and boxes of his discs laid out. So I was just like a kid at a candy store with my little $70 running around trying to find them. And I, after that, I was hooked. I was like, all right, we're into this. I played, I think, 28 tournaments that year.
Oh, wow. This was 2007?
Yep, 2007 into 2008. We had the Southern National Series. I actually didn't become a PDGA member until 2012. So I played like 5 years in Southern Nationals. But their season was weird. It was like summer to summer. I think it was like June to June or something like that, July to June. So I'd started, you know, right before the season began. So whenever the season began, there's a point series. So when I found that out, I decided to play the whole year as an intermediate and ended up winning first place in the points race. I went in those 28 tournaments. I had won like $2,000 in prizes. And I went to Alabama, to Florida, Mississippi. You know, I traveled all over the South and won this points race. And all I got is like a little disc with my name on it that I still have. I was like, well, why didn't I just move up? Because everybody started calling me bagger. I ended up winning. You know, I improved fairly quickly. Just that's my nature. Whenever I enjoy something, I really dedicate time to it. And, you know, I've been blessed to be able to succeed if I put something, you know, my mind to it and try really hard at it. So I just spent a lot of time throwing, putting, practicing, learning techniques off of other people. I mean, I didn't actually throw a forehand for, I think, a year and a half, like that entire time playing intermediate. Even though I was winning tournaments, I was not throwing forehands at all. And now that's like probably the strongest part of my game. It's one of the strongest parts of my game. I have a really accurate and trusty forehand.
Do you think that comes from baseball? I've seen a lot of correlation, people playing baseball and a forehand throw.
Possibly. I played baseball for 5 years, but seven years, from 5 to 12. And I pitched, I think, from 10 to 12. But, I mean, we weren't throwing curveballs or sliders or anything at that young of an age. So it's very possible. I mean, I ended up playing softball later on, a little bit of football, flag football. We didn't play anything. So it's very possible. I mean, I know a few people that are very good at sidearms that are good pitchers. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure it has a lot to do with the technique.
At what point did you start seeking out any sponsorships, or did companies start reaching out to you?
2016, I think it was. The Southern Nationals Pro Championship. I made the lead card, or the final round. We had like a final nine, and I played with Matt Orem, Cameron Cole Glazer, and Josh Childs. And I was in fourth place, and I made the final nine, so I got to play with them, and I was able to compete and hang. I think I ended up finishing fourth, but it was a fun time and a battle. And then after it was over with, Matt Orem was like, hey, man, you know, if you wanted to be on Latitude, he was with Latitude 64 at the time, I might be able to put in a good word with Dave Felberg. So I was like, oh, okay, cool. You know, I never really thought of it because I was using Innova. That's what I learned with and grew up with. And I actually reached out to them because I had gotten my rating up to like around the 990s, I think, lower 990s, 991, 992, something. And I had reached out to Jonathan Poole, and he had sent me like a contract and said all this and that they were interested, and it was going to be like a lower level. But then it was kind of weird. It was almost like he withdrew the contract because he sent me the contract and said, this is what we could offer you. And then he was like, well, what are your plans for next year? I was like, well, I'm going to go to Worlds. I plan on going to UCGC and blah, blah, qualified. And he's like, okay, I think we're gonna go to a different direction. I was like, what? You sent me, I have a contract that you sent me, and I was like, I'll sign it or whatever. And then he was like, oh, it was weird. He just withdrew it. So I don't know. It was weird. It kind of, I've heard some funny things, other people who've talked to him, and it is what it is. So whenever this thing with Matt came up, I was like, I messaged him. He got me in contact. Actually, I have a friend in Baton Rouge, Logan Weiss, who was on Latitude 64 too at the time, and he had known Dave from some tournaments he played, or and he had picked him up at the airport or something. So he ended up developing a little bit of a relationship with him. So he actually reached out to Dave and put in a good word for me also, and I had gotten contact with Dave and emailed him. I guess it was 2016 USDGC. Before the USDGC, me and Dave had been emailing back and forth, and he said, we like to meet up. Maybe we could get a practice round together and discuss the contract. So I was like, okay, cool. So I was still bagging Innova at the time. So I decided to switch my entire bag before going bay a major.
Oh, wow.
So it was probably, I don't know, August. So I had switched my whole bag and practiced playing different things, different courses, just locally. And I had a local vendor who I was able to, I had a bunch of Innova discs. I was able to trade them, so I didn't have to come out of pocket with a lot of these discs, and I went play a tournament in Texas, in Lumberton, and the first round I played with Trilogy discs, I shot a 10.57 course record.
Oh, wow.
Yes, I was like, okay. I ended up shooting like 9.9 in the second round, but I had like an 8-stroke lead after the first round, so I was able to win. And then I played another tournament later on, a few weeks later, and won that tournament. And then I went to USDGC, and I messaged Dave while I was there, and I was like, hey, I'm here in town. You want to get a practice round in? Well, he emails me back, and he's like, oh, I'm actually injured. I'm unfortunately not gonna be able to make it there.
Dang.
Yes. So I was like, wow, I switched my whole bag and did all this and that, and you're not even here. So he's like, well, we're still interested in you and blah blah blah, and we're gonna discuss with the team. It's like, okay, cool. Well, I sent him my tournament results, and I set up my very first round, rated round with Trilogy was 10.57, and hoping that that would sway him, but he pretty much ghosted me and never emailed me again. It's crazy. So I reached out to Kyle Webster, who is the team manager on Westside Disc at the time, and my buddy Logan Weiss was on Latitude 64, and he had left to go some, I don't know why he had left, honestly. He messaged Dave and asked if he could be back on Latitude 64 for the following year, and he said that they were starting to work on Westside, and that he was going to offer him a contract for them. They wanted to kind of build up the team. So Logan ended up going to Westside, and I had met Kyle at a tournament in Alabama earlier that year. We played on a card together and had a good time and stuff. So I reached out to him and messaged him, and said, hey man, would y'all be interested in sponsoring me? And just told him a bunch of results. So he got with the team at the time, and they got together, and it was like, I think it was Christmas day, a couple days before Christmas in 2016. He's like, hey man, welcome to the team. So I was
Merry
like,
Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Yes. I was so excited. I was like, awesome. So, I mean, I've been on the team ever since, 20, I signed the contract. I mean, we used to, get like, this was before Dynamic Disc and Latitude 64 combined to buy them out. So it was, a little different back then. and things are much smoother now and more efficient. It's been fun to grow with the company.
Yeah. What are some of the changes you've seen over the years?
Well, everything's much more efficient. We used to actually, our bonuses structure, we used to just get discs. You would order 50 discs and you would have to order all of them at one time. It was like, okay, here's 50 discs. And you have to put in your order, like, and you couldn't just choose, oh, well, let me try these two discs or five discs or whatever. You know, you
right.
have to put in a giant order for all these discs, which they were a lot easier to come by back then. But it still was kind of hindering you because if they had a new mold that came out and or whatnot, you know, sometimes it was hard to get. I mean, just being able to go to the DD website and being able to go into your account and just picking whatever you want and having it shipped to you is just so convenient. That's one of my favorite things. Plus, you can get apparel and, you know, anything you want.
Right. All right.
And the bonus structure is smooth. Everything you just enter and all the communication, just talking to the team, you can reach out to the managers. Most of the stuff back then was done through Kyle. You didn't really, you know, you couldn't really email the boss or have their number or anything. And nowadays it's so much better because you can reach out to Gabe or Jesse, or, I mean, you can email them, call them. They do these team meetings once a month with these weekly update or monthly updates. It's just much more efficient.
I mentioned in the intro, you're also sponsored by Midwest Dye Labs. How did that come about?
I'd seen Mason, you know, posting on social media on Latitude 64 fan page and seen him posting some dyes. So I ended up reaching out to him one day and sent him like 10 discs over. And he's like, oh, dude, you know, I was like, how much are you going to charge me, you know, whatever? And he's like, dude, I'll do it for free. And I was like, no. He's trying to hook me up with a good deal. So, we worked out and I sent him some money. But, I mean, he just hooked me up with this sweet dyes, and he's like, well, what do you want? I was like, dude, I think it was like 12 discs, whatever. Surprise me. Just a bunch of different colors, variations, whatever. Just uses as a test. And they came back, and I love them. They were awesome. So I did that a couple times over the years. Like, I'd get some white discs to build up because I actually color coordinate my bag. Uh-huh. So I'd send him, I have a stack of, had like a dozen Chris Clemens Clemenade Defenders. They're hybrid defenders, and I ended up having like 12 of them that were white, and I wanted to have a bunch of different colors of them, so I sent him like all of those and said, here, do pink, blue, orange, you know, green. That way whenever I need one of those colors, I could just slide it in the slot. And I think last year he reached out to me and said, hey man, you know, we've been working together last couple of years. Would you like to be part of the team? I was like, sure, man. You know, I love your dyes. So he'll hook me up with some dyes and some discs. And I posted some videos of some unboxing when he surprised me. And I was there on my YouTube and Facebook and stuff. And you can see his artwork. It's awesome. I love the spin dyes. And I probably a third of the discs in my bag are dyed by Mason.
Yeah, he's got a lot of great artwork. I like his discs. I have a few of them in my bag. I want to take a moment and tell you folks about the Champ Cap Solo by Putt Confidently. I've been using the Champ Cap for a few years, and I've definitely seen an improvement with my putting. I just recently got the Champ Cap Solo, and I love it. The Champ Cap Solo fits on my practice basket. It has a 13-inch target hole designed to increase my putting accuracy, focus, angle control, and speed. It allows me to mix up my putting practice through variation because I can putt through the 13-inch target hole on the one side or putt on an open basket. It also comes with two pickle links that I attach to the chains on the opposite side of the Champ Cap Solo. These visual aids are excellent in helping me continue to aim small while I'm taking a break from the Champ Cap Solo. I'm busy with my family and work. I do not have a lot of time for practice. The Champ Cap Solo helps me maximize what little practice time I do have. So whether you want the Champ Cap Solo, the original Champ Cap, or any Putt Confidently apparel, use code WSDFS for free shipping at puttconfidently.com. That's WSDFS. I'll have all that info in the show notes. So turning to tournaments, how do you prepare mentally and physically for a tournament?
Mentally, I've been doing it. I've been playing since 2007, so it's just a normal thing for me now. It's kind of a routine. I just get out there, try to get out there an hour early before the round, loosen up a little bit, you know, throw a little. I'll start warming up with a little sidearms, a little backhands, and then slowly start backing up and, you know, loosen up the arm, gain confidence. After I warm up my throws, I usually get near the basket and I'll throw or putt 30, 40 times or whatever it is. I like to putt inside the circle mostly and build up my confidence. This is a tip for new players, beginners too. Often when I go to tournaments, I'll see people putting outside the circle 40, 50 feet away and missing them. And all you're doing is not getting any confidence. You have no confidence yourself because you just keep missing putts over and over and over. I like to get 20 feet away from the basket, just keep putting and making those. You want to see yourself making them and build up that confidence. So I think for beginners, that's a huge mistake that people will do. They'll back up too far away, especially right before a tournament. You know, for 2 minutes, you jump putt from outside the circle. Don't worry about that till the round. You're going to miss those most of the time anyway. You might have a 50% chance of making them, you know, right, at best. So just build up your confidence, get inside the circle, get close to the basket, and just see yourself making them and just build up that confidence.
That's good advice. So you have over 10 years of tournaments under your belt. What would be your most memorable win?
Well, when that first year I was playing for the points race, I went to Mobile, Alabama, and it was 2007. I played City Mobile Championships, and there was four courses. When I got to the tournament, the first course, I ended up practicing six or seven holes and played them really well. I ended up shooting 3-4 down. And then when the tournament started, I ended up shooting like 3-4 over par on those holes. So after the first round, ended up way down at the bottom. In Alabama, they had 50, 60, 70 AMs back then, and they had a lot of amateurs. So I ended up towards the bottom of the field. And then I decided after that point, I'm not practicing, because it was four courses I'd never played. I'm playing blind on all of them. And I decided after that to not practice any holes, just to warm up, just get throw discs, throw towards baskets, whatever. Don't play any of the holes. And I ended up second round, shooting a hot round and jumping back up, slowly moving up like the top 10. Third round, I ended up getting second place. And then the last round, me and this guy, DJ, were battling back and forth. And it came down to the last hole. We both parred, and we had to go to the playoff. So they had a huge crowd that watched this playoff. And it was like this giant hill. We had to throw down the first playoff hole, and we both ended up parring it, and then you had to throw back up towards the hill. It was like 370 you had to throw to get up the hill. It was a big hyzer. So all the crowds up on top of this big hill watching us throw. And I got to throw first, and I threw as hard as I could up high, and I hit a tree by the basket, and it fell to like 60 feet away. And DJ tried to throw his shot, and he hit the hill, and it stayed at the base of it. So he tried to throw his up shot, and he went past the basket, past my shot. So I let him go first, and he missed his putt and landed by the basket. So I knew I could lay up for the win.
Right.
So I just laid up on the basket, and as soon as I laid up, everybody started cheering. So it was just like the coolest feeling. I mean, I'd been playing for probably less than a year at that point.
Yeah.
And there was like 50, 60 people watching us.
Well, that's amazing. What about from your pro side?
Man, it's hard to pick one. Okay. one of my favorite pro wins. We had a local tournament. Matt Orm decided to show up. He didn't register ahead of time. So I showed up the morning of, and I was like, oh no, Matt's here. It's my home course, but oh no. So I was like, all right, well, just do your best. Try and play. So the first round, I ended up playing well, and I had a two or three stroke lead after the first round, and Matt was in second. So we ended up, we were battling the whole way the first round. The second round was one of the best rounds of my life. I ended up shooting a course record and shooting, we had a 23 hole layout at this course, and I shot a 15 under, and I ended up beating Matt Orem by 8 strokes.
Oh wow, very nice.
Yeah, so that was one of my favorite wins ever, to beat, you know, a top tier player in the world.
Yeah.
By 8 strokes. And that record was probably 2015, 2016 that I shot that, and nobody's beat that record since.
So you mentioned course record a couple of times. How many course records do you hold? Do you know?
Oh no, not offhand. I mean, it's probably 20-ish is my guess.
How do you handle pressure during a tournament?
I think I try to not think about it too much. If I overthink a little bit, I'll try to take deep breaths, just focus on my breathing, just kind of psych myself out. A lot of times when I'm putting, I'll kind of like rock back and forth a little bit, just kind of build up the momentum a little bit, rock back and forth, and then just gain a little confidence. And then I'll go back on my back foot and just push forward and push through with the putt. So I try to not really focus on the nerves as much as possible, which is nearly impossible.
Right.
But I mean, you have to try to put it out of your mind as most as possible.
So when you're playing big tournaments like that, and you know, against, you know, great players, how do you balance the need to take risks and play aggressively with the need to minimize mistakes?
I think that just comes with your experience and learning over time. When you've gone for the risks and made the mistakes, you learn, okay, when you can go for them and when not to. You can kind of play almost match play. You can see how your opponent's doing. A lot of people say don't play your opponent, but when I know it's down to me and another guy, or two guys, I'll not even think about my scores, about what I'm shooting for that round. I'm just thinking about head-to-head with them, what I'm doing, and what they're doing, and shot for shot. And if, like, here's an instance I think of is, if we're close to each other's putts, like distance-wise, going for birdie, I'll often be like, let me go first. I'll volunteer, because a lot of people are like, hey, am I out or are you out? I'll be like, oh, I'm out. Let me go. Because I want to make that putt, and I want to put the pressure on them. So I'll voluntarily say, hey, I'm out. Let me make this putt and put the pressure on you. And many times it's happened to where I've made that putt, and then the opponent will miss their putt.
Has there ever been a time you had to overcome any self-doubt or mental blocks?
I'm sure we all have. I mean, you have a bad tournament, you miss cash. I go to a pro tour event and shoot terrible, throw this out of bounds and don't cash. Yeah, I mean, you get self-doubt. You're just like, why am I doing this? Why did I come over here and spend all this money and just to waste it? What was the point? But I mean, you just have to put that past you. You know, I'll dwell on it for a day or so, and then get back to work. You gotta keep grinding, push through, get past that mindset, and just go to the next one.
What do you believe sets apart the best disc golf players from the rest?
I mean, I think it's consistency. I mean, they don't make mistakes. They're just consistent at all the shots, the putts. They're just very well rounded. I mean, you can look at Calvin right now as best player in the world, most consistent. He's improved his game too. Like, he used to not have a great forehand a year or two ago, and now he's ripping 400-foot forehands. So he's constantly improving, getting better, and putting, and he's just got these low line drive, 500-foot shots. I think just these elite players, the best in the world, they just are so consistent and just rarely make mistakes.
What steps do you take to continually improve?
I try to get out and do field work, putt, and practice. You can always – that's one of my strong suits is putting. So I try to putt as, you know, much as possible, once a day. Or, especially if I got a tournament coming up, I usually putt every day the week of. I got a tournament coming up this Saturday, so I've been putting every single day. And, I mean, it doesn't have to be 1,000 putts or – an hour and a half of putting practice or something like that. I think that sometimes it could actually hurt you because you get sloppy and your form will get bad. I think just 15, 20 minutes, just putt until your mind starts, you know, sometimes it's good to push through a little bit if you start getting like just a little drained, a little irritated, you're missing your putts. Sometimes it's good to push through that a little bit, but not too much, because then you'll get just down on yourself and it's, why am I doing this? So I think sometimes too much, many putts can actually hurt you when you're in your practice routine. Mm-hmm. I think to minimize it, you know, 30 minutes. If you practice putting for 30 minutes every day, you'd be surprised in a month how much you've improved.
Yeah, that's true. How do you balance your personal life with disc golf?
Like job or family?
Yeah, job, family.
All of the above. I mean, they come first. My family, they come first. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why I'm not on the Pro Tour, is because I have a family, I have a full-time job, I need to support them. So for me, I'm mostly a weekend warrior. I'll go play tournaments across the southern states, maybe go throw a Pro Tour event, two or three in a year or something, within, you know, 6 hours or whatever from me. But I try to prioritize my family first and, you know, go through the schedule with my wife, and we'll talk about dates and what tournaments. I try to play maybe two tournaments a month, sometimes one, and try to not play a ton of 3 days, you know, try to stay with 2 days, 1 day tournament. I do a lot of 1 days. And then my job, I mean, I'm a painter. So, I mean, I have to provide for my family, provide for myself. So I have to work my 40 hours a week and hopefully not do too much to hurt myself or injure myself, overwork myself during the week.
Right.
To where it hurts my game on the weekend.
Yeah. Well, sounds pretty busy. Do you have any other hobbies or anything you do?
Not really. Sometimes I'll play a little video games, you know, every few days. I used to play a lot more. Actually, last year, whenever Ulibarri was injured, we played Fortnite a lot.
Oh, okay.
But now that he's back healthy, he's on tour full time, and he hadn't been playing hardly at all. And most of my friends have slowly stopped playing, so it's kind of like boring to me to play by myself.
Yeah.
So I don't really play that much. I'll try to turn it on once a week or something and play. Sometimes I'll play with my daughter, but pretty much disc golf and maybe a few little video games here and there.
What kind of advice do you give to new disc golf players?
for new disc golf players, depends on the level. You know, if you're a brand new beginner, just starting to play first 6 months or something like that, you know, I'll tell them to not go out and get the new fancy fast high speed disc. You know, don't get the 14, 15 speed disc. Start with putters, mid ranges, maybe even some stuff that's neutral or slightly understable. Learn your form. Work your way up the fairways. Learn to throw those in controllable and straight. And then you could work your way, because a lot of people will throw discs that their arms can't throw. You know, their arm speed's not,
Right.
won't get those discs to the right speed. Even it says 14 speed, doesn't mean they can throw it. They should be throwing an 8 speed or something. So I like to tell them to just start with the slower stuff, work on their form, and slowly build up. And if you're, you know, advanced level or intermediate level and trying to work your way up, just that's one of the other things I like to tell them about putting, is just work on your confidence. Don't practice putt too much. Don't overdo it. Give yourself a break.
And so for players that have been playing for a while and maybe looking to get sponsored, what kind of advice would you give to them about reaching out to sponsors?
I would say, you know, if you see sponsored players, and you know, go out there and introduce yourself. You know, say, hey, I'm so and so, whatever. You know, playing disc golf. Go play a lot of tournaments. Try to get your rating up. You know, always getting your rating as high as you can is a plus. You know, being active in your local clubs, community, active on social media, you know, being involved in the groups. All these things help and benefit because you want to sell yourself to them.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on, and thank you for listening. This is the West Side Discussion Podcast. The theme song is What Would You Be Like by Akira the Don. We'll continue the discussion next time.